Mr. Page, reel one, where were you born, please?
In Barnford, near Ipswich.
Which year was this?
25th of April, 1933.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Barnford?
Yes.
How old were you when you left school?
15.
So that was in 48?
Yes.
What are your memories of the war in Barnford?
At times rather frightening. We had bombs dropping. We had one man killed. Certainly a lot of incendiaries dropped around the village, around my home area. But it was long drawn, and we had to carry gas masks to school, that sort of thing. And of course, we was on food rationing. And it was quite hard, really. Clothes, of course, were rationed, coupons.
Did any of the houses in Bromford get hit?
Yes, there was three or four in the Whittenlier area which were hit and damaged, which was about half a mile from my home.
What was your address in those days?
It was 161 Bateman Lane, which was about half a mile up the road from here.
Were any of the villagers casualties in the raids?
Yes, there was one man, unfortunately, was killed. He ran underneath a culvert, and the culvert caved in when the bomb landed nearby, and he lost his life, and there was one or two other casualties as well. But fortunately, we were lucky.
So was he suffocated?
He was indeed, yes.
Do you remember his name?
Yes, he was a Mr. Smith.
Was he the only casualty during the war?
He was the only fatal death in the village, but there were, as I said, one or two others with injuries.
Was there any question ever of your being evacuated?
No, because actually evacuees came to this area from London, Midlands, and those sort of places.
Did you get to know any of the evacuees?
Oh, yes, because I attended the school. But of course, that was many, many years ago, as you'll appreciate.
How did the evacuee children and the local children get on with each other?
Well, it seemed to get on quite well. I think perhaps the London ones might have had a little more spark sometimes. But this has gone back, obviously. I mean, the war came, as you know, in 39, and of course, I was only about six then. So, of course, it was all a little bit unrealistic for us. We didn't really sort of appreciate all the seriousness of it, I suppose.
What do you mean by a little bit more spark?
Well, I think that by nature, I suppose, we were that quiet sort of Suffolk types, where you, in the city, you get a little bit more, skill about, really.
A bit more what?
A bit more sort of, what shall I say? Perhaps, that's quite not a word I'm really trying to say, but a bit more pushy, perhaps, a bit more lively, shall I say, whereby the Suffolk, as I was reckoned to be sort of quiet sort of person, you know, I mean, on the south and the Suffolk were isn't it?
Was there ever any trouble between the London children and the
No,
Brompton?
I think we blended very well. Very well indeed.
Did you have evacuee children living in your house?
No, we didn't, no.
You said you were talking about rationing. Were
Yes.
there things which you badly missed, which you couldn't get?
Well, most of the ordinary provisions that we take for granted today, of course, were rationed. I mean, bread and everything like that, meat and so on. And of course, you had to have the appropriate amount of coupons to get the appropriate amount of the food. And I think our mothers did a sterling job in keeping us nourished to the best of their ability. It must have been very worrying to have to keep a family on a very tight, limited amount of coupons.
Were you ever frightened during the war?
Yes, quite often, yes, because sometimes when the siren blew, which was probably a warning, you would wonder, obviously, what was going to happen, what was going to fall from the sky or whatever. And sometimes this happened perhaps two or maybe three times in a night. So the unfortunate thing was the sleep was all disturbed, which obviously is not a good one when the children are trying to learn to, you know, education.
Did you ever go into Ipswich to see what was going on there in the war?
Yes, we used to go in Ipswich, but perhaps we, on a Saturday or that sort of thing, because obviously we're accompanied by one another. Yes, I mean, but not to look around, not only for shopping and that sort of thing.
Did you see the damage in Ipswich?
Didn't see a lot. I mean, there was damage in Ipswich, obviously, but we didn't see very much of it over here, no.
Were there any celebrations at the end of the war?
Oh, yes, there was vast celebrations, and of course in the village here as well.
What form did the celebrations
take? Well, ours took, there was a hill up the road, which we used to call Round Hill, and I remember we all took stuff up there, rubbish, what have you, cut bracken and all sorts, and we had a massive fire, and we had nearly all the local people went up there and had a real celebration. And it, being high up, of course, it shone far away. You know, it's quite something.
Any other memories of that festival that you had at the end of the war?
Well, we also had another seed come entertainment in the village as well, which was another quite a thing as well. And that was for the children of the same, which was a lot of it then. So that was from the limited resources, I mean, they were quite something really.
Now, can you tell me, what job did you get when you left school?
Actually, I went to Wigan Browns to learn to be a joiner. My father sort of felt that trade was a good thing to have. I don't think I quite agree with him really. I think I wanted to go on the land, but there I was. The carpenter instructor at the school said I was quite a good carpenter, and he felt that I'd go a long way in that. And that's where I went. But I stayed for about 2.5 years, and then I went to work with the civil engineers, and then of course call-up came. And that was that, really.
When did you get called up?
On the 21st of June, 1951.
How did you feel about being called up?
Well, I think I sort of resented it because I felt that I had to go to school when I was 15, which I resented because I wanted to leave at 14. And I was about 20 days, had I been 20 days old, I would have got away with it. So I rather resented having to carry on school, so I did resent this rather intrusion into my life, but duty was duty and one had to comply.
Where did you have to go to at first in your call-up?
I was called up to Quebec Barracks at Northampton, which was the depot of the Northamptonshire Regiment.
How were you treated in the basic training?
Well, not too bad, really. We got the usual shouting and all that sort of thing, but not that bad, really.
Did it upset you being shouted out in that way?
Well, a little bit nervous, yes. Certainly, yes. But one gained more confidence as one went along, and of course, one become more competent, so to say, and then it began to fall into place better, you know, the whole thing.
Did you cope all right with the things that they were asking you to do?
To the best of one's ability. I think we sort of shouted and bullied into getting it right, really.
Were there things that you found difficult?
I thought the physical training side I wasn't so good at. I wasn't much good at handstands and that type of thing. The other parts I didn't find too bad, the drill and rope and drill and all that sort of thing. It wasn't too bad. I managed that all right.
Were there any of the boys who couldn't cope with that?
Very small percent, I think. There was the odd, perhaps a couple in the platoon, but certainly one was put back to Sibby Street. But in the main, somebody you got transferred back to the Pioneer Corps, which was a corps which did the more labouring work of the army in those days. So there was generally a niche for you somewhere, but that was a very, very small percent, really.
Did, at the end of the basic training, did they give you a choice of staying with the Northamptons?
Yes. Yes, we were given the choice. The only catchphrase in that was we had to become 3-year soldiers. And of course I didn't feel that the army offered what I wanted in life, so I declined. As did a considerable number of the others. But one or two did become regulars, and I think they probably came the best off. Of course, the North Hampshire regiment went to Trieste, or was then the first battalion was in Trieste, and of course they had quite a good posting, so I think we lost out through taking the whatever came on. It was off.
Where did you go to after Quebec Barracks?
After Quebec, we had leave, and I think it was a week or 10 days, something like that. And then, of course, I went down to Barry St Edmunds, which was the East Anglian Brigade Depot, and we then went there for another 10 weeks training, which was called continuation training.
What did that consist of?
That consisted of manoeuvres, night manoeuvres, hand grenade throwing, that sort of thing. Advancing and what sort of thing.
How were you supposed to throw a hand grenade?
Well, this was the drill was to obviously be in a trench, and I had to remove the pin, and of course throw the grenade when ordered to do so. And of course there was only 3 seconds. From the time that you throw it, to duck down because it's the next week. The grenade rather was a pineapple. It has a clip which goes around the side and also a pin which holds it in place. Providing you don't take the little pin out, of course you can. It's quite safe, but once you take the pin out and you release it, of course, then of course the varmint goes.
Any incidents that happened whilst you were at Barry?
Not to my knowledge, no, because we were very, very well supervised for this sort of thing. And of course there are the grenades as well, which you probably know. There's the smoke and of course the sulfur ones as well.
Which cat badge did you have at Barry?
The Royal Norfolk's.
And after Barry, after the continuation training?
Well, we did the 10 weeks, and then after we qualified, if that's the word to use, we then spent the time on various fatigues around the camp, corporal duties, perhaps the sergeant mess, all those sort of things. And then eventually we were told that we would be going abroad. The dates kept frequently altering and put back, and we formed a draft in called DHWR, which was the serial number given to the draft of people. I can't remember exactly how many of us there were. Maybe 40, something like that. And we were, of course, reinforcements for Korea, really.
Did they tell you at that stage that you were going to Korea?
Yeah, well, so I think we more or less knew that would be our eventual destiny.
How did you feel about that?
I didn't really mind. I felt that it was something more than perhaps background soldiering, really. I couldn't say that it held a lot of fear for me at the time. I felt as though we were then getting on with something, really.
Were you bored with the barrack work?
Well, it was competitive. The shielding and drill and all this sort of thing. I felt that perhaps this would be another dimension, really. So, I wasn't nervous, really.
Had you been following what was happening in Korea?
Oh, yes. Yes, we knew what was happening, but I think at our age, we still felt it was perhaps bravado in a way, I suppose. We felt a bit, we'd done what our father, our father did.
Had your father been in a war?
Well, yeah, but he wasn't in the actual, he was an ammunition storeman, actually. He was in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps.
Can you tell me about leaving Bury to go to Korea, please?
Yes, we, as I said, these dates were frequently altered, and then eventually we had Christmas leave, and about, I think it was about a couple of days after Christmas, we moved up to by train to London, and we went to some underground place there, which I think was a disused shelter, and I remember us down in the bowl of the earth the night. I often remember a very strong smell of sleep, really. It was a transit type camp, and people were frequently apparently coming in and going out. So as we prepared, where others were coming in and staying the night in there and that sort of thing, and then the next day we proceeded down to Liverpool.
What happened there?
In Liverpool, we was embarked on the troop ship Lancashire.
What were conditions like in that ship?
Not too bad. We were sleeping in hammocks and that sort of thing. It was a little crowded, but not unbearable. And we stayed on there for approximately 5 weeks.
Anything special happened to you on the ship?
Not particularly. We carried out a certain amount of physical training and general duties to sweeping out and that sort of thing, keep clean and those type things. A little bit of weapon drill, if time allowed, or space allowed rather, and that sort of thing to keep fit.
Were you still with the Norfolks?
Oh yes, still with the Norfolks, yes.
Where did you eventually arrive?
We eventually arrived in Hong Kong, and then which was our destination, and then we went to Fan Ling, which was in the New Territories, and joined the 1st Battalion of the Middlesex Regiment.
But
we were attached troops. We were not in the Middlesex Regiment, but we were attached to.
How did you find the Middlesex Regiment?
Quite nice. They had been in Korea in the early stage of the Korean War, and they were quite experienced, obviously. And we were able to train with them and gain quite useful information and, of course, know-how and that sort of thing.
And the barrack? You were in a barracks, were you?
They were like tin or metal-type huts, and they were held down by horses because there were very strong winds and typhoons occasionally occur there. So, we never experienced it, not obviously we were there.
And the barracks were at Fan Ling?
Fan Ling in the New Territories, yes.
Did you have much contact with the Chinese population in Hong Kong?
Very little, apart from when we had a weekend leave, so that was the only time.
What kind of experiences did you have in Hong Kong?
In Hong Kong, we obviously did training there. The hillsides were very similar to Korea, which was helpful to our training because we were able to learn how to go up hills, how to go capture or hook to capture with methods doing so, all that sort of thing. And we also did some internal security duties, dealing with riots and that sort of thing.
Did you have to deal with any riots?
We went out once, yes, when there was trouble down in Kowloon. Yes.
Can you describe what happened?
We just went down as a battalion. We all took up positions, foreign positions. Nobody actually fired, but some rotten were details should the order be given, but we took up positions, and after about 2 hours, the trouble subsided, and we turned to deal back to the camp. That was the only time.
This was in Kowloon?
Yeah.
What could you see of the rioters?
Well, we were quite near them, actually, and as I say, they were a little bit troublesome, but once they were spoken to, and we made them more trouble, really. And we came back. That was the only time. And we used to have a week on internal security, and also patrol the borders as well. So this was to ensure that, you know, there was no infiltrators and that sort.
In what way were the rioters troublesome?
Well, obviously being where they shouldn't be and making some demonstration about some reason or another, and that used to be our trouble to keep law and order, really, or help to maintain law and order.
Were they throwing stones?
Don't remember throwing stones, but they were just generally abusive, that type of thing, and waving their arms and that sort of thing. And We, as I say, went to rather more the presence rather than to be extra violent, if you know. The thing was to obviously feed them and get them out of the way, really.
What were they shouting or saying?
Well, they were making Chinese noises. And apparently this used to happen now and then. And that so happened when we were on this one particular week when we were on duty. You know, it happened.
Could you understand what they were saying?
Not really, but, you know, our superiors dealt with that side, and we were just left to by whatever the military authorities told us to do.
About how many of the demonstrators were there?
Well, it was quite a number. I mean, we were looking, it might have been 500. It's quite a number of people and that sort of thing.
Were they rioting or just demonstrating?
Well, as far as we're concerned, they were classed as rioters, I suppose. Looking back, I mean, it could have been more of a demonstration, I suppose.
Were they damaging property?
No, but just then rather abusive, making a lot of noise and that sort of thing. Aren't they presenting some law or something, or something being imposed, that sort of thing?
What kind of ages were they?
Well, in the main, might have been sort of 30, 40, that sort of age, near as one can remember.
Were they men or women?
A bit mixed, yeah.
Did anybody get injured at all?
Not to my knowledge, no. As I say, we were told that certain people would fire a shot in the air, that sort of thing, but that was more or less as a warning to disperse, you know, if somebody, if they became too problem a shot to my ear, and hopefully I did the trick.
Was a shot fired?
No, not on this incident, no, but it was done. Yeah.
Were you nervous or frightened during that?
No, moment? I think the young chaps, we sort of felt it was quite fun, really. Being 18, 19, you know, it was quite fun.
And when you were on the border control, what kind of people might cross the border?
Well, you've probably got the communist Chinese, or could be Koreans, that type of person. And that was all border wire and that long there as well. That was a long place called Shattercock and Lo Wu, as I recall.
Would you stay in one place, or would you patrol the border?
Well, we used to patrol along and that sort of thing. But we never had any, I mean, there were times when they did break through, but we never had any problems, really. Not when I was there.
Did you like being in Hong Kong?
Oh, rather liked it, yes. It was quite a nice posting.
What did you like about it?
Well, it was a nice country. The training was quite good there. We got out quite a bit up on the hillsides and climbing and all these different things. It was quite interesting, really.
Was there anything you didn't like about Hong Kong?
Not particularly, no. No, the only thing I didn't like was the mosquitoes. And when we was in town, we used to have the mosquito nets over the beds. I forget the actual time, but as the sun began to set, it was law that you had to have the mosquito net on, or you could be charged, you know, in the unit. And we used to take pills called paludrine for the prevention of malaria.
When did you leave Hong Kong?
As near as I can say, it would be. So we did. We left there, I can't remember the exact date now, but we left there for Japan and for further training, really. And also to a camp called Japan Reinforcement Base Depot.
Where was that?
That was in Japan, and I think it was a place called Kiri. And whilst there, obviously it was a reinforcement base depot. And of course, things were taken into various regiments from that. And of course, that was how we joined the Black Watch.
How were you introduced to the Black Watch?
Very, very well, really. We were introduced and spoken to by the Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel McAnroe, and he made us very welcome. And we were chosen in little groups, and we joined the various companies of the battalion.
Which company did you join?
I joined D Company and Templeton. I was then in number two section.
Were there mostly Scotchmen in your platoon?
No, not Scotch. Certain men from the Midlands area. And of course, we were there was 21 of us joined D Company, which I think brought the strength up to about 106 or 109, I think it was, the company then.
How did the English and the Scotch get on with each other?
Very well, actually. I found myself in a tent with a Scotchman and another one of my fellow chaps who joined up with me. He found himself in a similar situation. We asked if we could be together, and the answer was, oh, yes, if that's what you want. And I think most of us, these Angus kept together and the Scotchmen they kept together, but I think that was an ill-founded feeling because we found they were very good and we intermingled excellently and we had a wonderful relationship. Well, it was just a feeling at the time because these people that speak Scotch are different to us, and it made us obviously felt a little bit apprehensive.